What's on your reading list this summer? PBS is sponsoring The Great American Read, providing a list of the 100 most memorable works of fiction and asking for votes. Are you taking part? Do you spend time at the library? Or do you think libraries and places that archive historical records are relics of the past that have been replaced by the online world? Gauging the need for physical locations to read and research versus life in the digital cloud is our discussion today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Matson, committed to the communities it serves, building on more than 50 years of service to the communities of Alaska. Learn more at matson.com.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. At our website and on Facebook, you'll find the list of 100 top novels. You can even print out a handy list of them to read yourself or torment your children into reading. We're talking about the importance of reading, of books, of authors, and of libraries and archives today, why it's important, and if there are threats to maintaining them in the future. Joining me through the studio at KTOO in Juneau is Patience Fredrickson. Patience is the director of the Alaska Division of Libraries, Archives, and Museums. Welcome, Patience.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Also on the line from Juneau is Karen Gray. Karen is the state archivist. Hi, Karen.
Hello.
And in the Anchorage studio with me is Mary Jo Torgerson. Mary Jo is the library director for the LUSAC here in Anchorage.
Anchorage Public, right.
Mm-hmm. Welcome, Mary Jo.
Thanks.
You can also join our conversation. Are you voting on the PBS list of novels? Have you read all of them? It would be cool to hear from Alaskans who have. Are you an advocate of maintaining books, archives, and other historical artifacts into the future? Or do you think Google searches and Wikipedia can replace physical collections? You may be able to tell from my voice that I don't think that. You can join us at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, as a couple people already have, at talk@alaskapublic.org. So, Mary Jo, let's start with The Great American Read. For listeners who aren't familiar with this national effort that PBS has undertaken, describe what it is and how LUSAC is both working on the national level with these books, this list of national authors, but also if there are efforts to localize it.
You know, The Great American Read is really a fun thing to do this summer. It lists out 100 of the most favored books in the United States. And there's really a huge range of books in that. Everything from 50 Shades of Grey, which kind of surprised me, to certainly Harry Potter. And the purpose is to get people reading and to vote on the most favored book. I've only read 54 out of those 100 books. So
only,
I have my...
she says.
So I have a lot ahead of me. From an angle of local, we have book clubs around it. We, all of our digital products support the best 100, and you can get them in multiple formats.
All right. And are you aware of, I know you've got kind of a little club going on, sign up thing. How many Alaskans are signed up?
That piece, I don't know, but it certainly has been popular. We have a huge list of the books, and people just stare at this list and with book covers to figure out how many they've read. It's kind of become a game to some degree at the LUSAC Library and certainly in our branches.
Yeah, yeah, we had fun with the list here, too, people marking up the books that they had read on a big list on the wall. So it's all about novels. Why is it important to read fiction?
That's a great question. I go in stages between reading fiction and nonfiction, but I just finished an advanced copy of Ann Tyler's newest book. And what I'm struck by with fiction is that it reaches into your soul and touches a part of you that nonfiction can't. Nonfiction is factual, and even today with with journalists, certainly the role of nonfiction. I'm reading Dreamland about opiate addiction. That certainly gets to facts, but you contemplate in a way and you reflect in a way that I think only fiction can do it. In some respects, I think fiction is truer, quote unquote, than nonfiction.
Patience, and Karen, would you like to jump in on that question? Why do you think it's important to read fiction?
I think fiction really does mirror our interior lives, and it is very true because I think a fiction author has to really think about life as he lives it and sort of distill it down. Poetry does that even better. Though I have to admit, as a combined creative writing and history major, I love historical novels because those give me a slice of life in a very palatable form. I can read about what it's like to live in the 14th century and, you know, something about the British royalty with historical novels. So that's a lovely combination for me. I like thick books with good history and good characters I can dive into for a long time.
Karen, do you have comments on fiction, the need for fiction?
I admit I have less of a creative mind, and I read a lot of nonfiction. I save my fiction for when I'm on vacation, and then I delve into it and I don't let go. But I tend to read nonfiction, and a lot of those are technical guides. Not quite as exciting as
wow, so disciplined.
As broadening my mind.
I admire that, that discipline of yours. Mary Jo, sure.
Could I add one more point? When I've only been in Alaska 6 years, and librarians would tell me, oh, you should read a work of fiction to really get a sense of Alaska. Seth Cantor's Ordinary Wolves, to me, I recommend all the time.
Absolutely.
Because it provides an experience in fiction that you could never get in the world of nonfiction. You get a sense of what it's like to come in from a village into a city. And so that's why, personally, it speaks to me in a way that nonfiction doesn't.
That's a great point.
And Seth Kantner does another thing. He produced a book called Shopping for Porcupine, in which he detailed his life in a family that homesteaded. And what was amazing about that was to read the nonfiction and the fiction in tandem and to see both sides of his experience and his fictional version of it. It's an amazing two books to read together.
Yeah, he's an incredible author and just quite an amazing mind all the way around. I'm glad you brought up Seth. Are there similar efforts such as the Great American Read to raise awareness? We just were speaking about Seth Kantner. What about other Alaska authors? Are there efforts that the libraries in the state undertake to sort of champion the writers that we have right here?
Well, one of the things that you might want to keep an eye on is the Alaska Center for the Book. They focus on Alaskan authors. The first week of October, they have Alaska Book Week. And then they also have a number of other efforts. The Center for the Book is located in Anchorage. It's an all-volunteer organization. And they do things like letters about literature, and they do the Contributions to Literacy in Alaska Awards. They have a great webpage, and it talks about everything they do. One of the things that the Center for the Book is working on this summer is that we had an offer from the Library of Congress to bring Tracy K. Smith, the poet laureate, to Alaska. And she will be in Alaska, I believe it's August 27, 28, and 29th. What she's doing is really fascinating. She's going to, like, the Palmer Pioneer Home, and she's going to read a little bit of her poetry, and then she's going to hand out an anthology of poems she has selected. She will read some of those poems with the people in the audience, and then they're going to discuss them. And she has a speaking engagement here in Juneau, and she's also flying out to Bethel. So the Center for the Book is something that totally focuses on local authors.
I love it. Thanks so much for letting us know about the Poet Laureate visit. That's great news to get out on the program. And if you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska. We are today discussing Great Reads, the PBS list of Great American Reads. And we're also discussing the importance of libraries, museums, and archives. Our guests in the Anchorage studio We have Mary Jo Torgerson, director of the LUSAC and the library here in Anchorage. And also on the line from KTOO in Juneau, Patience Fredrickson, who is the director of the Alaska Division of Libraries, Archives, and Museums, and Karen Gray, who is the state archivist. You can join us at 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255 if you have your favorite Alaska author that you'd like to discuss, or if you're part of the PBS Great American Read, if you really value the library in your community, maybe you have a great story about how that's helped you or your children. You can call us statewide, 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, it's 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Patience and Karen, last week, Forbes published an opinion piece by an economist titled, "Amazon Should Replace Local Libraries to Save Taxpayers Money." There was, as you might imagine, a swift and large backlash, and Forbes took the piece down. But the central argument was that technology has eliminated the need for lending libraries. As people who oversee these state facilities, have you heard this argument that books are so last century?
I've actually heard the idea bruited about that the internet trumps libraries and archives. And I think humans have this adversarial mindset. It's either or. You can only have this or you can only have that. You know, when radio came on, they predicted the death of newspapers. When TV came on, they predicted the death of radio. When internet came on, they predicted the death of libraries, radio, and the newspapers. And guess what? We're all still here. The human ability to plumb into different ways of gathering information based on your needs. Some people want to read it. Some people want to hear it. Some people want to play with it on the internet. It seems boundless. In libraries, every time we add computers and broadband to libraries, the next thing we hear from that library is, we need more, because people want more of this and they want to come to the library and get it. In terms of that article, it's fascinating to me that an economist would say that a commercial enterprise should override a public good such as libraries and archives. I totally do not buy this argument. What he is saying is that there is an economic underclass that will always become an intellectual underclass because they will not have access to ideas that are available to them now in libraries. Strongly disagree with that article for obvious reasons.
And so you see the advent of all the iterations of media through the years as purely additive and not ever subtractive.
Yeah, certainly. It's that adversarial mindset. You can either have this or you can have that. We certainly are proving as a culture that it's additive. And, you know, people are going to choose the format that they want. There are different time periods in a person's life when they may use the public library heavily, and there are time periods when they'll use it less heavily. We know that young families with children love to come to the library because they can take out a pile of books and not have to pay for it at a time in their lives when their earning power is not so high. We know that people who were mature adults with older families tend to fall off using it. But then we know that seniors come back to the library. So there is, like, people use the available resources in the time and place of their life choosing. And that's what we see again and again in libraries.
Well, Patience certainly made an excellent case for the importance of libraries and how we're just adding, we're not subtracting. Mary Jo, do you want to add to that? Do you ever hear from people who use the library that, why do you still have books? Why don't you just go all online?
You know, I haven't, frankly, heard that. I do hear on occasion people talk about how they download materials and don't use public libraries. Tell that to the 2,000 people that came on Saturday for our Harry Potter Quidditch game. So libraries are viable in ways even beyond most people think of. We continue to use the physical item of books. And we've done a lot of polling lately, and the physical item, the actual book, is still the most popular. That said, we also provide digital resources, certainly through Overdrive, or now it's called Libby, and a product called Hoopla. One of the things that libraries do that, you know, we provide downloads, we provide the plethora of media, both physical and serials. So I say serials, newspapers. One of the things that we see certainly at all of our libraries is people coming in from that had been in villages come to the public library to get the local Dillingham paper. Now, you can't get that from Amazon. You can't get people coming into a place that's welcoming, that's neutral, that embraces people coming in to use us. That's the value of public libraries. And certainly the role of early literacy is huge, and the partnerships with school districts. Do you know, last year we worked with the Anchorage School District and got 40,000 children library cards immediately through a partnership. The role of literacy in this community is so huge. We need to educate our children.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska. We're talking about the importance of books, of libraries, of archives, and how not everything's digitized also. I think that's an important point to remember, is that as we go forward, there's an expectation that everything's online. Right. Not everything's right. Online. You can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255 if you have a favorite library story, or you maybe are questioning the need for libraries in the future. Call us, give us your question, and let's have a discussion about it. You can call in Anchorage at 550-8422, 550-8422. Statewide, it's 1-800-478-8255 or 1-800-478-TALK. Karen Gray is also on the line from Juneau. She's the state archivist. Give us some examples. We're talking about the importance of physical libraries and book collections. But give us some examples of how historical archives have helped educate or correct past mistakes, making the case for why these things are important. A recent example is springs from the movie Spotlight. Old printed directories revealed information for investigative reporters at the Boston Globe that really ramped up their reporting to a degree that they would not have been able to do this deep dive if it hadn't been for those old printed directories. I talked to a research editor at the Washington Post recently who said that when Jeff Bezos of Amazon bought the Post, they were moving and they were told they couldn't take all their physical collections. And she raised a ruckus about that, saying, pointing to this movie and saying, look what happened there at the Boston Globe. If they wouldn't have had these printed materials, we have to maintain these collections. So, Karen, help us understand why it's important to have these archives and have them available.
Well, most archives, whether they're in an archival institution or in a special collection, are primary source documents. And they do come in all formats, but the bulk of what we do sit on is paper and sometimes microfilm. Mm-hmm. And it is hard to move them. It's hard to access them in today's age. But we do try to hit up some subjects that we see folks asking more about and try to reformat those, digitize them, and make them available online. But there's so much of it, and no matter what we're doing with it, we still have to manage it, whether it's in paper or in electronic or in an analog format. And we also have to help guide folks to it, because we're not set up in the same way that a library is, by subject or by author. We are set up by the creator of those records. So part of what we're doing is, when we can try to get some of the more, the records that could help folks interpret history or look at certain subjects, we do try to put in subject headings that folks are more likely to search on to be able to get those online. which is different than the traditional way we are set up, which is by the creator, by the creating agency, and then by a hierarchical structure underneath that. So that's part of our new challenge of how to get the information to folks who cannot come to us, and then also educate them that this information is available for them to come and research so that they can write articles about it, turn it into movies, write books. We do have lots of folks coming in that do research that write nonfiction books, and disseminate that information and interpret that information.
What's the process for deciding what and when you archive material? You can't archive everything. How do you make those decisions?
Well, here at the State Archives, we do have a fairly straightforward mission. We collect records created by government entities. We will occasionally accept records from citizens if those records relate to how government has functioned in the past. So we're looking at who the creator is, if it shows evidence of the institution and what that institution did, if it shows a snapshot in time that was very important to the local community or nationally. So we want to be able to capture those things that affect citizens and their rights, show evidence that government existed and its legal and financial status at a particular time. And those items that just affected our citizens in such a large way that we know we're going to be wanting those in the future for other purposes, since records use change over time.
And how do you decide what gets offered fairly broadly to the public for research use, and what can only be used for very specific projects? Is it just the fragile state of some archives, or how do you make those determinations?
Almost all of that goes into a determination. If we do have records that are fairly fragile, we would like to explore reformatting those sooner than later, so that we can capture the information before it deteriorates so much that it's not available for anybody to see. Mm-hmm. And right now, one of our most popular methods is to digitize it. We'll then sometimes put it out to microfilm as a long-term format. We don't believe microfilm is dead yet. It will last for quite a long time, and we can always redigitize the microfilm. We're looking at the information, not at the actual record source. And we think that the information is important to get out to folks so that they can use that in their research in the long run.
All right. Go ahead. Patience, did you want to jump in there?
Well, I know there was a case in which one of the state agencies used the materials in the archives on a very large lawsuit. And by using those materials, they recouped a fair amount of money for the state of Alaska.
It was over $250,000, I believe.
And so the records had an immediate bearing on the fiscal resources for the state of Alaska just by having those materials reserved and preserved for future use.
All right. I wanted to get to a phone call here, but first an email. From someone who says, lately I've been doing research for a book and needed access to past issues of the Anchorage Daily News and the Anchorage Times. Those are not available online, but easily available at the library. Without that access, there would be no way I could fact check information for my book. There will always be a place for libraries in a free society. Thanks for that email, Pam. Let's go to Bethel. Susan is in Bethel. Hi.
Hi, I want to follow that thought. There will always be a need for libraries. And I really think there is, because they serve many other purposes also. They change over the years of what we use them for because, yeah, technology has stepped in. But our local library in Bethel, I want to do a shout-out for them. They keep a pulse on what the community wants to do, and people from the community come in and volunteer to do things. We had a gentleman that came in to teach Spanish. We had a volunteer come in and teach kids how to play ukulele this summer. There's scheduled craft activities. There's scheduled evening coloring, and there's a knit and crochet group that meets in the library. There's DVD movies that you can rent for a whole week. It's a place people donate used books, and so they periodically sell used books. Bethel doesn't have a bookstore, so that kind of fills a gap there. And I just want to think, I just want to thank the people here that keep this library active and going with the challenges of budget cuts and what have you. And also there's a negative connotation that homeless people go there. Well, they got to go somewhere, and that's also a network outreach opportunity for people that want to reach out to help the people that are down and out. So I just want to say libraries are so necessary for so many different things, and you need to do those different diversity, these different things to keep a library open and active in the community. And when I hear on the news how libraries are being shut down and what have you, that kind of breaks my heart. So, because I know how a small rural community really appreciates a place like a library.
Well,
so I just want to put a word out on that.
Yeah, thank you so much, Susan, for the call and for raising that important issue that libraries are much more than just books and access to computers and other things. They're community gathering places and educational group opportunities, places for people to find resources that they need. So thank you so much for that call. I wanted to ask about SLED, the Statewide Library Electronic Doorway. It's Alaska-specific. What's in there?
SLED has two major portions. The first off is there are a number of websites that have strong content about Alaska, and that has been developed over the years. It's 20 years since SLED started, and so you have a whole sort of, you know, Alaska history, Alaska population, Alaska art. And you can go in there and it will take you to websites that the librarians have reviewed that have really good, strong, stable content about Alaska. The other part of SLED are the statewide databases. Now, databases don't sound sexy or anything like that, but there is some incredible information that the University of Alaska and the State Library purchase for everybody to access statewide. We're paying about $800,000 a year for these databases. And some of them are just amazing. There's a genealogy database there. There is live homework help where students can call in, or they use a computer, they go in, they get to a sort of place, a switchboard where they say, what grade are you in? What subject do you need help with? And then they are connected by computer to a human tutor who can help them do their math homework, do their chemistry homework, or review their essay that they've written for a class. There are a number of other databases there. There are health databases. There are small business startup databases. There's a database called Automate, where people can go in there and put in the name, the year and model of their car and get repair information for their car. There's just this incredible number of databases that are available there for every Alaskan to access from home, from library, from their schools. It's an incredible amount of information for people to use on a daily basis, and they are heavily used.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that, helping us better understand what that is. And we are discussing today on Talk of Alaska the importance of reading, of books, of libraries, museums, archives. And we're going to continue that conversation after a short break as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, and today we're talking about the importance of reading, of libraries, of museums and archives. Our guests are Mary Jo Torgerson, director of the Lusac Library here in Anchorage, and she is in the Anchorage studio with me. In Juneau, through our friends at KTOO, Patience Fredrickson, the director of Alaska Division of Libraries, Archives, and Museums, and Karen Gray, our state archivist. I wanted to go to an email here from a listener who says, libraries are holy grails, in my opinion. Thanks for having the show. So thanks for that note. And let's go to Roger in Moose Pass now on the line from Moose Pass. Hi, Roger.
Hi. I'm president of the Moose Pass Public Library, and it's been in existence since 1938. And is one of the older public libraries in the state. And
did you say 1938?
Pardon?
1938?
Yes.
Wow, that's awesome.
And it's always been run on volunteer labor. And about a year ago, we opened up a new facility that is very nice, and we've quickly become the community center for Moose Pass. And we have spun off on two book clubs that meet year round. And we've had yoga sessions, and we show movies in the winter time that attract, 35, 40 people, which is a good turnout for anything in Moose Pass. But, we're filling many different community needs. And again, we're the real community center right now.
Well, thank you so much for calling, Roger. That is a tremendous story about the library being there since 1938. I'm still just stunned by it. That's just an amazing thing in such a small community. And also, Roger's comments get at, again, that libraries are often the community gathering places. And in some small communities in Alaska, that's the school. But in a lot of communities, it's the library that brings the community together so that people are interacting with each other instead of increasingly isolating. I wanted to get to an email that came in earlier from Robert Barr. He's the library director in Juneau. And he wrote in to talk about the important distinctions between digital books and physical books. And part of that is, as he said, libraries are motivated by public access, not profit. And this is a really important distinction, and I think could be more critical in the future. Profit motives could drive more romance novel sales, more 50 Shades of whatever, but not necessarily historical works of nonfiction, as Karen was saying that she so enjoys and reads a lot of. What do you think about this public voice aspect? Mary Jo, let's start with you.
So the public voice, that's why public libraries are so important. I want to go back to the role of libraries as a democratic institution. You can't stress that enough. We welcome everybody, yet we're discerning about what we purchase because there are limited dollars. We have popular and unpopular opinions of things that are purchased, but it's fascinating the drive for the bestseller, and yes, we certainly purchase those. But what about that work of historical fiction that is so important for readers to be buying? Let me also kind of diverge a little around common good and taxation. Because that's one of the, to me, one of the more disturbing things and the disturbing aspects about our society today. What happens when people aren't willing to pay taxes for the common good? What happens to a democratic institution like a library where you can discover fake facts or fake news? That's the role of our libraries today across the nation. The other thing that the Moose Pass gentleman talked about is the library as community center. That's an increasing role, and we have really diverse roles across the United States of what a public library is. That's because we have diverse needs. So, for example, in Anchorage, we help people find jobs. We just wrote a grant with seven other public libraries around the state to help people start a business. So, depending on need, we look outward and define what we do.
Well, I would also, I want patients to jump in here on this on this idea, too. You know, bookstores, as the ill-fated Forbes write-up suggested, that bookstores should replace everything, neglects the fact that not everyone can afford to buy books, and not everyone wants their house overloaded with books that they will have forever. And also, bookstores are, by their corporate philosophy, self-censoring. They're only going to carry whatever the owner of that corporation decides they want in their offerings. Christian bookstores might not want to carry books on atheists and so on. So libraries have, as you said, more of the common good in mind. Patience, please add to that.
Well, certainly libraries collect materials over the long run. One of the things that we see in libraries in Alaska is that the Alaskana collection is incredibly popular. Now, the way publishing is in Alaska, these books have very short print runs. And so libraries reach out and try to get the Alaskana that they need to meet the needs of their patrons. And then they tend to preserve that information over the long run. And those are the types of books that might not show up in Amazon, that might not get turned into an audiobook on the digital library. So in terms of preserving local history, libraries capitalize on that. Anchorage has probably the best collection of books on Anchorage of any library in the state. And it's an enduring area for people to read in. Certainly the common good is what libraries are all about. I always hearken back to that movie, It's a Wonderful Life. Try to imagine what a life would be like if Mr. Potter had won everything in Potterville and everything was commercial and there were no places for the common good. I think that would be a very bleak life indeed, that only the only places you can go are where you can afford to go.
Well, and also your note about the fact that libraries and museums, archives are collecting over the long period, so that they're not so subjected to the current political whims or sentiments in the country about what's acceptable and what is not. We get a much broader range of thought and perspective and historical information that might not otherwise be popular and so therefore might not be so available. Mr. Barr also wrote about physical versus digital that gets at actual ownership of material. You own a book and can do with it what you want. You can sell it, trade it, give it away. This isn't true of digital use purchase. Do you, as librarians and archivists, do you think this is important? Should people purchase certain books, physical books, to pass along to their families, but maybe the fluffy entertainment reading is fine for digital copies? Mary Jo, what would you say to that?
I probably read more books today online, utilizing, of course, the library, right? But there are those books. So, for example, I use Seth Cantor. I always have a copy of that. I always have a copy because it's such a fabulous book, and I pass it along. It really irritates me that publishers, for example, Tor Publishing, it's science fiction, it has put a moratorium on us, on libraries purchasing digital books. And some publishers really pardon the French, put the screws to libraries because they will not sell to us, or they sell at an inflated price because, of course, people that use libraries don't buy books. That's completely wrong. Mm. So there is a role for libraries, and I certainly buy, let me rephrase that. I check out more materials digitally today than I used to.
Mm-hmm. And that inflated price is certainly true. The Alaska Digital Library, which is pretty much statewide at this point, we have a few libraries that haven't bought into it. It's costing us about $100,000 a year to buy the books for the Alaska Digital Library. And if you're a person in Anchorage or Juneau or in many other places, your public library card gives you access to the Alaska Digital Library. Those books that we're buying that are audio books and e-books, we're not getting the $9.99 cost that you see on Amazon when you buy your own copy. Overdrive, the company that provides the books for Alaska Digital Library, we're paying anywhere from $40 to $70 to $80 a copy for digital books and audio books. They do inflate the prices for libraries because they see us as having deep pockets. We don't feel like we have deep pockets. And so they do sort of throttle down what libraries are able to offer just by virtue of the price.
Mm. Well, and let's talk a little bit about funding and the state of libraries. One person that called in was, you know, talking about how libraries have closed in many places around the country. And we have a caller on the line who also wrote in earlier this morning about the Willow Library, and they have a capital project. Carol is on the line looking for creative ways of fundraising. I'll let her describe that, but then let's carry that conversation forward about the sustainability into the future of funding for libraries. Carol, hi.
Hello.
Do you have a question?
I sure do. First of all, I want to thank you for having this very important topic, and it's serving as a great review of all of the many services that libraries currently provide, and I hope a lot of people are listening. I think the whole topic of access for everyone has come up repeatedly, and I have a question that does relate to deep pockets and to funding. We're currently trying to get a new library in Willow because our current one has many inadequacies in terms of space, electrical issues, and we are about halfway, well, more than halfway there on raising funding. But we're looking for new ideas. MAPSU Health Foundation has, and the borough have taken us about two-thirds of the way toward our total funding requests or the funds needed. But I'm wondering if any of your guests or callers have any new and creative ideas that we might consider, since the state is not apparently stepping forward for capital projects for libraries.
Well, I'm glad that you called, Carol, because I think this is a chronic situation for especially small libraries that they're always up against. If it weren't for wonderful volunteers and people who dedicate a lot of time and their own resources to keeping those community entities surviving, that they might fail. So I know that Mary Jo, the Lusac Library does some really awesome things with live music and different gatherings. The Anchorage Museum is just this incredible mix of live events, and it's gone from my memories as a kid of museums being these places where you didn't dare breathe too loud to now there's dance parties there. So can you offer some ideas to Carol for fundraising?
You know, fundraising is such a difficult topic that, you know, you really need a sustainable tax base. And whether that is a sales tax or whether there's a junior taxing district established, our foundation certainly has relied heavily in the past around specific foundations. I can't praise enough the role that the Rasmussen Foundation has done for libraries. They get libraries. They've certainly supported libraries so much over the years. I came from Washington State, and we're very lucky that this state has supported libraries and library buildings, and I hope that that will continue once we finish this recession.
Well, and I want Patience to also comment, but we have to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll hear from Patience and Karen about ideas for small libraries, making sure they can be sustainable into the future.
Funding for Talk of Alaska was made possible in part by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and listeners just like you. Thank you.
Yay, we're back. That was fast. Patience, do you have ideas to help Carol out here with the small community trying to keep funds coming in so they can keep the library open?
Well, and Carol probably knows this, the Alaska State Library gets annual money from the legislature to provide operating grants to libraries statewide. We don't run the public libraries of Alaska. They're each done by their local borough or community. But we give out annual operating grants to every public library in the state to the tune of $7,000 for each outlet. So Anchorage has five libraries. They get five of these grants. Willow gets one because it has one. So that's money that is for operating. It's for salaries, heat, buying books. And there's some criteria that the library has to follow in order to get those fundings. And so there's operating money. Then some years ago, in about, I think it was 2008 or 2007, the legislature created the Public Library Construction and Renovation Fund. And over the probably about 6 or 7 years, that fund spent $56 million helping libraries renovate. And so there were probably, I think, 15 library projects that got money from this fund. And everything was clicking along fine until the price of oil cratered a few years ago. And they have not had any money for this project since then. And I know Willow was probably, you know, hoping that they would get into this list and move up the list to get money from the state. I don't know. I haven't heard anything about this money coming back because the state fiscal situation has been so grim. So I've been sort of keeping an eye on Willow. I know they got money from the MatSU Health Consortium. And I don't know if they've received money from the Rasmussen Foundation. Other than that, they would need to probably look for grants outside for construction and see if they can find anything there. I don't know if they probably have a GoFundMe up to try to bring in some money. Fundraising is sort of tough in a small community, mm-hmm. mainly because, you know, there's so few people there, and then the fundraising event costs money, and sometimes you don't clear very much. So it's sort of a long, drawn-out process. I believe that the MatSU Borough has come in with some money, and I am hoping Rasmussen has a way of saying, we're not going to be your first funder for a capital project, but we will be your last funder. So I'm hoping Rasmussen will come in and help top off Willow's fundraising effort for the renovations. I know they really need the renovation of that library, and I know they're looking forward to getting that done.
Well, thank you, Patience, and Mary Jo, for your ideas for Carol, and good luck, Carol, on keeping the library going there. 1-800-478-8255 is the number. We've got about 12 minutes left in the program if you want to get a quick call in, if you have a question or a comment. 1-800-478-8255 or locally in Anchorage, 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We had an email from James who said there's a great article in the Frontiersman about Sutton librarian Nancy Bartels retiring after 35 years.
Wow.
So yes. Congratulations, Nancy.
And Nancy, under Nancy's leadership, the Sutton Library built a lovely new facility, and it's one of those ones that got the capital funding. It's a great place, and my congratulations to Nancy. She's worked with the State Library for a long time as we've helped her develop her program there. One of the things I'd like to mention is that just in July, the State Library put up a new web page, and it's called books.alaska.gov for government. And what this does is it pulls together as many sources of free books as we can. Now, it's not the Gutenberg Project where you've got all the books that are in the public domain. What's on books.alaska.gov for government? We have Sesame Street ebooks that are available statewide. There are about 1,400 Sesame Street books there. We have Tumble Books, which are books for K-6 grade, and I believe there are 2,000 or 3,000 ebooks there for students to use. The Ready to Read Resource Center, which ships out kits of board books to families and daycare centers to get toddlers and to read and get used to the written word and turning pages. There's also a link from books.alaska.gov to the Alaska Digital Library, which is where the audiobooks and the ebooks are available for people whose libraries have joined this program. Last year, 440,000 ebooks and audiobooks were checked out from the digital library. So if you have a local library card, you can access materials there. We also have a link to the Talking Book Center. The Talking Book Center provides audiobooks to people who are blind or physically handicapped to such a degree that they cannot read a standard book. It's an entirely free service. The material and the machine to read the books comes in the mail. And finally, we have a program that we pay the Juneau Public Library to offer. It's called Alaska Mail Services. For people living in a town without a public library, they can get in touch with Alaska Mail Services, and they will mail books to that family. So it's a sign-up thing, and it's entirely free. So books.alaska.gov to find books statewide and see what's available to every Alaskan for reading.
Thank you so much for that patience, and we'll make sure to link to those, to that site and others after Talk of Alaska concludes today. We had an email from Rich in Sitka who says he liked the characterization, Mary Jo, of putting the screws to libraries by charging libraries more for books than they charge the general public, the booksellers. He's referring to authors. He says authors and other content creators, to use the current term, need to get a return on what they write. If they don't, there will be no new books. And, you know, I notice that when there's sales, especially digital copies of books that are 99 cents or for a certain time, they're free. And I get that on the one hand, it may encourage people to engage more and read more, but also it does seem like it's reducing the value of books. I'm an author myself, and I know what time it takes to put into writing a full-length book and the editing and the great time and expense that it takes for someone to put these things together. And so when I see sales 99 cents, I think, really, 99 cents? What are your thoughts about that valuation of writing? Is it okay just so we're getting more access?
I have mixed feelings about that. My spouse buys those 99-cent books all the time. And oftentimes they're older books. But what it does, it prompts you to start reading that writer you normally wouldn't read. And it's all a continuum. It's about publishing and utilizing libraries. And that's why the synchronicity between publishing and libraries is so important. What it does take, though, is a degree of curation on the part of staff. And we haven't really talked about staff. And staff are so important, both from a reader's advisory standpoint, from a selection standpoint. You know, you can't go to Amazon. I mean, you sort of can, but to get a recommendation for a good book. But there's that people-to-people connection that can only be found in a library. Have you read a good book? And it creates the bond and relationships that are so important that you can't get in a library. It's a community meeting place.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Let's talk about some in our final few moments here. I want to talk about digital archives and other archives, historical documents that are available within the collections of ARLIS, the Alaska Resources Library and Information Service, and AMIPA, the Alaska Moving Image Preservation Association. What can you tell us, any one of you, Karen, you're the state archivist, Patience, you oversee all of it, libraries, museums, and archives, and Mary Jo, you're right here in Anchorage working. What's available in these collections, and how publicly available are these things?
Well, I used to live in Anchorage, and I had a second job from the state library. I worked at the UAA, Alaska Public UAA APU Consortium Library, which ARLIS is housed at the Consortium Library. I know what their collections are composed of because I'd walk through those collections. I'd help students access the materials there. And those are materials from six different small government libraries that were all merged into one. I know they have a web page. I know they list all of their online resources, especially their journals. The journal information for scientific research is so crucial. I'm not sure what Exxon Valdez materials they have. Mm. The Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Center Library was part of the ones that merged into ARLIS. Karen, are you aware of Exxon Valdez? What sort of digital material is available on the Exxon Valdez?
I believe that there are a lot of still images and video that's available in electronic formats through ARLIS. I'm not sure of textual documents that they may have available, but the original Exxon Valdez oil spill library did have a lot of the visual documentation from the first couple of years of cleanup.
And we're coming up on a grim anniversary. It's 30 years.
Yeah. 30 years.
And again, you know, we can in no way overstate the importance of historical documents and archives into
and
the future.
And, you know, as for AMIPA, I do not know what they have digitized there. I always worked Sundays at the Consortium Library, and they were always closed on the weekends. So I'm not actually sure. I know they have a web page. So that would be the main thing to do, is to go to the AMIPA web page and see what's available there.
Absolutely.
Though the other thing for people to be aware of is the Alaska Digital Archive.
Yes.
Which is the statewide digitization project, where there are thousands of historic photographs and publications and other materials up for people to search. It's a real treasure trove for Alaska history.
And I want Mary Jo to comment on that, but I want to get Jerry in here very quickly. Jerry, what's your question? You have a question about voting. Hello, Jerry.
Yes, I just wanted to know what the address was to go on site and vote for my favorite nonfiction.
Nonfiction? I don't know. I'm talking about the Great American Novel. Mary Jo, please tell us where people can find out information about the PBS Great American Read, and then your final thought maybe on the ARLIS and AMIPA in a couple seconds.
Yeah, check the Anchorage Public Library website, and you'll be able to find more about the Great American Read. I would like to just touch briefly on the Alaskana collection at LUSAC. It's an important part of what we do. History in public libraries is what our mission is, and the collection of that information.
Thank you. That's an excellent way to end the program today. Thanks so much to Mary Jo Torgerson, director at the LUSAC Library here in Anchorage, and to Patience Fredrickson, director of the Alaska Division of Libraries, Archives, and Museums, and Karen Gray, the state archivist. Thanks so much for being on the program. Thanks to the callers, and thanks to Eric Bork, our engineer today, and Wesley Early on phones. Thank you, Alaskans, for tuning in. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. This program is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400. This is Alaska Public Media.